Hello and welcome to episode 70 of Golf Pod Kentucky. Thank you for joining. My name is Ethan Fisher. I'm the Communications and Marketing Director at Golf House Kentucky. Before we get into the matter of this podcast, we're recording this the day after the shooting in downtown Louisville that tragically took the lives of six people with several others injured. And it's illuminating, I think, when something like that happens so close to home, that there are bigger fish to fry out there. And I noticed one of the names of on the victim list, Josh Barrick. He was a member at Audubon Country Club and played a round of golf on March 26th and probably had no idea that would be his last round of golf. But life is very fickle and you never know when it's going to end. So before we get into anything regarding this podcast, just want to take a moment to acknowledge the lives that were taken way too soon and extend our thoughts and prayers to their family members and friends. Now, as we move into some news and notes going on within Kentucky golf right now, the tournament season for the Kentucky PGA has opened up. Last week at Belterra Golf Club, we had the 27th playing of the Kaiser Cup matches take place between member professionals and assistants associates. For the first time since 2017, the assistant associate team took the victory with an 8.5 to 6.5 point victory. Daniel Eisman III from Weisinger Hills was the captain of the winning team, so congrats to him and the nine members of that winning squad. And then at University of Louisville Golf Club, we had our first open tournament to the Kentucky PGA this year with the Pro Shamble, presented by Cunningham and Yamaha and supported by Bushnell and Hole in One USA. Mitchell Moore, who had a great 2022, he and his partner Tad Switzer took the victory at that event by one stroke after shooting a round of 60, 12 under par. Kentucky PGA Junior Tour is also rocking and rolling with 2023. We've had four events take place now. Happened very quickly. Feels like it was not long ago. We were talking about the season starting, and here we are with four events down already. But Mackenzie Payton, she's done a very good job stepping in and beginning to lead the Kentucky PGA Junior Tour. She will be having full control of the steering wheel going forward with Mike Vick transitioning, I should say, to the Director of Amateur Competitions role. But congrats to all the Kentucky PGA Junior Tour champions so far. And thanks to everybody who has participated in an event. The numbers have been great so far. And we're looking forward to a lot more good stuff coming for the rest of the season. And one of our junior golfers who we're very proud of, Kylie Miller, she represented the state at the Drive, Chip, and Putt National Finals at Augusta National Golf Club right before Masters Week. It may not have been the performance Kylie wanted, but she handled herself with a lot of grace, and we are extraordinarily proud of the fact that we get to call her a Kentuckian. There was a video that I published spotlighting Kylie and her sisters, Emily Paisley, plus their parents, Jonathan and Jade. If you haven't checked that out already, I would highly recommend you go look at it. I think it's a great indication as to what golf can do and how kids or any age golfer, regardless of where you're from, can maximize success on the golf course. Kylie and her family, they're from Mayfield, and it's pretty rural, to say the least. There's not a whole lot out there, but they found a way to get Kylie to Augusta and should serve as inspiration that we can all achieve our dreams regardless of where we are. Now, let's go ahead and move into our featured guest in this episode. It is Brad Faulkner. Brad and his company CSS Mechanical will be the presenting sponsor of Hope for Heroes on April 24th at Polo Fields Golf and Country Club. Brad was very kind to share a lot of different stories and a lot of different perspectives about golf, military, things off the golf course, and I think this is a really good listen. So I hope you enjoy. Without further ado, here's Brad. All right, I am now pleased to be joined by the owner of CSS Mechanical, which is our presenting sponsor for Hope for Heroes in the coming days, Mr. Brad Faulkner. Brad, how are you, sir? Thank you for being here.
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And This is a pretty common question to start off when we have our guests come onto this podcast, but given the fact that it is a golf podcast, there's a really good way to start out everyone by just talking about how you got into golf and maybe just kind of summarizing why everybody loves the game as much as they do. After all, there's reason why we're all here connected through this game one way or another. So what's your story? How did you get into the sport, and how has it kind of gripped you over the course of your life?
Well, I mean, that's a great question, and I could go on for hours about that. I was very fortunate to have my dad loved golf. He was a veteran. My grandfather loved golf. He was also a veteran. And I guess I was about 3 years old. There was a driving range on Papa Lovell Road, and my dad got laid off from his job at Harvester, and my grandfather also got laid off from his job at Harvester. Well, they started babysitting me. Well, the only way to babysit me was to take me on the golf course with them. They had a little par three course there. And my dad, of course, I don't remember. My dad told me, man, you were hooked from the beginning. And, you know, we would play for candy and things like that. I think that's how they got me hooked. But we would just every other day we'd go to the range and hit balls, and you know, that bonding time and stuff that I do with my son now. I mean, it's an incredible passion of mine, golf. And so from 3 years old on until I was about nine, Cherokee Golf Course, Mark Kemper, who's a great influence on my life, he started a junior club, and my dad found out about it in the local paper, in the Courier Journal. And so my dad started dropping me off at Cherokee when I was about 9 or 10, and my dad lost his job, and I guess I was about 11 or 12, and I'd already started working at Cherokee. And so we only had one car. And my dad said, well, you're not going to be able to play golf. You know, you can do stuff in the backyard. We kind of had a big backyard. He said, we're going to take paws on golf. And, well, I just wasn't going to let that happen. So I started taking the public bus to Cherokee at 12 years old, which my son is 12 now. I can't imagine him having to do that right now. But I would take my clubs on the bus and transfer four times because we lived off Smyrna Road. So it was quite a ways from Cherokee. And, I mean, some of those memories are the best days of my life. I mean, I just... My dad said, well, you sure do have a passion. And he actually got two jobs. He worked at a movie theater, was going back to school, and I'm pretty sure he delivered pizzas. I can't remember right off the top of my head. I tried to think about it before this call, but he was always working. So then my grandfather retired, and he started taking me, every day we would go to the golf course. In the summer, we'd go to Iroquois Golf Course, and we would just practice and wait till 3 o'clock for the twilight raid, and you know, all that stuff. It's great memories for me, and that's why I spend so much time with my son on the golf course now, because I realize what that, you know, those memories are. So, you know, without even, I mean, I was trying to get better, but nobody knew anything about golf. We were just out there hitting it around. Mm-hmm. When I was 13, some friends of mine at Cherokee and the pro Mark Kemper, he said, why don't you try the Kentucky Open qualifier? Well, it was $100. And so I felt like I got to find a way to make $100. So I took some money that I made working at the golf course, you know, washing carts and whatnot. And I bought baseball cards and trading cards and things like that at the gas station by my house. And I would go up to the baseball field by our house where they had Little League, and I'd sell them. And I made, geez, I must have made $300 or $400. I thought I could retire at, you know, 13 years old. And so I paid for my entry fee for the Kentucky Open qualifier, and I actually made it at 13 years old. Well, that got me. I mean, I was super hooked. And Mark and I were in a playoff together, and we both made it. And Mark Kemper, that is. And, I mean, from there on out, it was, hey, Brad's going to play in this tournament. And, you know, off the NCAA record, because I did play college golf, a lot of people at Cherokee helped me get to play in tournaments, which was very cool. And so I try to give back to people that I see. They're, you know, like the first tee, several years ago, I won some tournaments and they gave me irons, and I donate that back. And so golf just hooked me on life, really, learning about life and giving back and trying to be humble and nice to people. And then as I was about 15 or 16, and this is kind of a cool story, I won a tournament in Lexington at Kearney Hills. It was called Tournament Champions, I believe, or Future Champions. Mm-hmm. That Eddie Tyree at Seneca put Danny Barron and myself in. And so we won, and it was individual, but our Seneca team won the tournament. And I'm kind of fast forward a little bit. My wife, Jessica, her maiden name is Jessica Kell. She won the 12 and 13-year-old division or under 12 division. I can't remember off the top of my head. And, you know, we didn't know each other or anything like that. She would later play golf at Louisville like I did. But I found an article in my parents' house after they passed away with Jessica's name and my name in it. And I thought, man, what a full circle golf turns into. It's just crazy. So after that tournament, I couldn't afford the AJGA stuff. I couldn't travel around. So what I did was at Mail, when I went to Mail High School, the regionals was that was my big tournament of the year. So to qualify for state, because our team wasn't any good. So I won regionals 3 out of 4 years, and I didn't get noticed by many colleges because I didn't have a national resume. And so the University of Alabama Birmingham recruited me. And I drove down there by myself. I was 17. Went on a visit, had a great time, but then saw some fights out on campus, and I mean, I had to tell it out of there. I thought, I don't want to go here. So I left UAB, came back, and my good friend that I grew up with, Chris Redman, he was friends, his grandfather, Lloyd Redman, was friends with Coach Snellenberger. And Coach Snellenberger and I and Chris and his grandfather played cards together. We knew, well, Coach Snellenberger knew he was going to Oklahoma, so he helped me get a walk-on spot at Oklahoma. So when I got the walk-on spot at Oklahoma, it was July. I was getting ready to head out there. 1st of August, Ernie Denham shows up at my house, which you guys know Ernie Denham very well.
Oh, yeah.
Great guy. He's a heck of a card player, backgammon player. But anyway, you know, get a little sidetracked on him. But he showed up at my house, and I walk in, and my dad's a military guy, and he was nervous for me going all the way out to Oklahoma. It seemed so far back then. And I said, Ernie, what are you doing here? I knew Ernie very well from the junior tournaments that I played in Kentucky. And he said, my dad interrupted me talking. And said, this is your new coach. He said, you're going to play for Ernie Denham. And he had recruited a really good player named Jace Bug, who unfortunately passed away. I played a lot of golf with him. He's an unbelievable player. But he had recruited him, and Jace decided not to come to Louisville at the last second. So that's how I got my spot at Louisville, and then that's how I met my wife. And, you know, just kind of a domino effect. But Danny Barron and I played at Louisville, and we still talk every day, make fun of each other every day. And it's golf has just been great for me.
Yeah. And you touched a little bit on some of the things you've accomplished, and you know, you've sold yourself short on several items. You've done a lot. You've won several club championships from Valhalla to Hurstbourne. You've qualified for USGA championships. So it's not like golf is just something to get some outside time. It's something that you're also good at. So do you think there's any key person or any key tip you got along the way that really illuminated to you how you can thrive on the golf course?
Yeah. I'm going to have to resort back to that veteran mentality. You know, so it was all new to my grandfather and dad, you know, golf and tournaments and, you know, stuff like that. But they would just say when they'd show up, my dad was always working. My grandfather's retired, and I hung to his hip like my son and I do now. But my grandfather would say, you know, whatever you do, it can't eat you. You know, and that sounds kind of, it's a weird thing, but, you know, so what if you make a double bogey? You're still going to be living, and the next hole you go, the next, you know, and go for it in two, do, you know, and it was just a veteran mentality of just get it done. And, you know, I carry that over into work today. You know, we might have a project. We're a mechanical contractor. We do piping. We do heating and air. We do plumbing. Well, we might have a project go bad. We hit a line in the ground, you know, and it's our fault. Well, that's a double bogey. And then whatever happens, the next thing, we go on to the, you know, go on to the next job. And we try to do better. So I feel like that competitiveness of, you know, hey, you're gonna be okay. You know, take your chances, but you have to have preparation. You know, he was big on preparation. Mark Kemper was big on preparation. Kevin Greenwell was big on preparation. Eddie Tyree was a little bit big on preparation, but having more fun. He's great. And I feel like, you know, Danny Barron and I playing a lot together and competing helped me a ton. In my opinion, Danny's the greatest golf pro in the state of Kentucky. I mean, and general manager. I mean, what he's done at Hurstbourne's unprecedented. It grew during COVID. You know, and so to answer your question, I guess more fully, I surround myself with good people that have good work habits. And I got a little advice when I was a kid from my grandfather that was instilled in me. And I feel like that just kind of translates to, hey, you might get lucky in a tournament here and qualify, And I appreciate you mentioning the USGA qualifiers. I take a lot of pride that for three decades I've qualified for them, the Open. I'm the Kentucky Open on 4 or 5 decades. And this past summer I played with a former Ryder Cup member who's trying to come back on tour. And he offered me three shots aside of Valhalla. And I told him, no, I don't take shots. And he won one press on me, and he's the one that pressed. So that made me feel really good. You know what I mean? So, but the best thing about golf is, I guess I'd have to say, I met my wife, Jessica, through golf. You know, I saw her on the putting green at Polo Fields and walked right out there and said, hey, we've got to go on a date. And she said, are you serious? And I said, yeah. She said, that's pretty aggressive. And I said, well, I'm taking my chance. It's like going for a par 5 and 2. And she understood that talk, and she laughed about it. And I said, besides, we'll have the same tan lines. So everything, you know, worked out great. We got married. We got 2 great kids. I got my little girl's a junior Olympian for the field hockey. I'm so proud of her, Savannah. And Brady made the junior worlds last year. And it was the same week. So, I mean, it was just a special summer. We had a great time. So I appreciate you bringing that up. Yeah.
Oh, of course. It's quality stuff, though.
Yeah. Now,
with CSS Mechanical, you started talking about it a little bit, and I want to dig more into the company itself, what you all do. So what's the history of the company? How was it founded, and what's kind of the mission of the company and what it strives to accomplish?
So that's a great question too, Ethan. It goes back to golf and the veteran thing. I tie those together so much. I was playing golf in 2007. I was playing golf in Savannah. My daughter was due in 2008. And Jessica and I were both working. We're kind of making ends meet, but we're not seeing, how would you say, longevity of either job. And she's super smart. I mean, she has her master's, and she has a specialist degree, and she loves helping little kids. And I knew we were going to have a baby, and some of the little kids she was helping at she's a school psychologist. I mean, the stories that these poor little kids have, it was taking a toll on her. And, you know, we're having a baby, and, you know, it's just, I thought, man, I've got to figure a way to make some extra income. Well, I was playing golf with there's no such thing as a Marine. I don't know if you know that. They're always a Marine when they're a Marine. I learned that the hard way. I got yelled at one day about that. But yeah,
my father-in-law was in the Marines. He would definitely agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, he probably has a challenge coin too. I don't know if you've ever heard about those, but that's I learned that from Dan Rooney back in like 2015 or 16. But anyway, great people. So this guy, we're playing golf at Polo Fields, actually, where this tournament is. And he says to me, he ran a local hospital. And he says to me, he goes, hey, do you know any painters? And this is 2007. And I said, yeah, I sure do. He said, well, we have some hospital rooms that need to be painted. When do you think they could be there? And I said, I can be there tonight at 7 after we get done golfing. And I had never painted a day in my life. I'd help paint like fences and stuff. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. He goes, you don't have a company. I said, well, I'll tell you what, you let me paint these hospital rooms. And if you don't like it, then you don't owe me anything. Just buy me dinner. And he said, okay. So I went in, I went to my parents' house because we were in a little bitty house, and I couldn't mess that up. But my parents didn't have a huge house, but they had a garage. So I thought, well, I started cutting in walls and corners and all that stuff and learning how to paint. And it's kind of the golf philosophy. You know, I thought about my grandfather, you know, hey, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? It can't eat you. You're just going to try it. And if it works, it works. So anyhow, I go to the hospital and I paint that night. He comes back that morning and checks on it, and I'm a nervous wreck. He said, this is tremendous. He said, you need to start a company. So I started a company, and this was 2007, and late 2007. So I started painting for him full time, and I was doing it all through the night. And then he said, hey, do you know anything about concrete work? So I reverted back to the veteran mentality. Yeah, we can do anything. So I said, yeah, I can do concrete work. And it was a little hard on my back and stuff like that, but, you know, that was another opportunity, right? So I started doing the concrete work, and he really liked that. And then the economy got, I started doing that through about 2008, about March, when the economy got really bad. And, but hospitals were still having to spend money. So I knew that was a good niche. Well, some of my friends that were, heating and air specialists, they came to me and they said, hey, we want to work with you. We'll do painting. And I'd already started doing window cleaning and just anything. And they said, we want to work with you. We don't have anything to do. You know, we're cut out. A lot of the plants in town, chemical plants, were shut down and are slowed way down. And they, these are great people. So another golf reference, you know, surround yourself with great people. And so it was 2008. It was about March, and I hired these guys and didn't know what I was doing. Went to my accountant and got that figured out. Well, we needed vans, and this was about May, and we're pretty busy. It was 2008. And one thing about my grandfather was he really loved horse racing. So I always followed horse racing. And Big Brown was running the Derby. So I'm not getting off topic. I'll tie this in pretty quick. Big Brown was running the Derby, and I was playing. And Robbie Alvarado, who Gary Demling helped run the Scramble, Jim Vining and Gary Demling for Robbie Alvarado's foundation. And Kent DeSormo was the jockey on Big Brown. Well, Kent, it started barely sprinkling, and Kent DeSormo went into the clubhouse. He wouldn't play anymore. And I knew Kent from being on the backside, and we were doing some heating and air at Churchill Downs. And I said, hey, why are you sitting inside? And Kent said, well, I'm riding Big Brown, and I can't have a cold while I'm getting interviewed for winning the Derby. And I thought, man, that's pretty confident. I never really heard a jockey talk that confident. And so I took some extra money that we had made, and I talked to my guys, and I said, hey, we need vans. And the banks is not loaning money, because this is 2008. They're not loaning money to a startup company. And I said, we really need vans. And I said, and I've told my son and my kids this story, so I'm not afraid to tell it out in public. I took all that money, and I went and bet it all on Big Brown. And, you know, he won. I went and got the money and bought two vans, and the rest is history as far as like getting our fleet started. And we still have those vans. You know, they don't run anymore, obviously, but they're still at our shop. They're kind of like a historical thing to me and my family, and Steve Mackin, who came over with me, one of the first ones. And then in 2011, we really grew. Kevin Brown came as well. And Steve and Kevin are the greatest guys in the world. They worked with me, you know, through thick and thin, through COVID. And in fact, you know, they helped me with the Hummus to Hardheads, which is a veteran deal. When guys come back from serving, our local union has a Hummus to Hardheads, and we hire veterans, and then they have been tremendous. And our turnover rate is practically zero. And it's been a really good thing. We could grow, and I've been offered to be bought out by big conglomerates, and I'm just not going to do it. It's like a family, and that's with the veteran mentality, the golf mentality. You know, these are my friends, and we're going to make it work no matter what. And I got to say this, during COVID, we didn't have one person take off. And I told everybody at a team meeting, I said, you guys can go home to your families. You know, we'll figure it out. And all of them said, we're staying. And it was like their break from reality, and everybody worked, and it was great. So that's how CSS got started. And I approached Kevin and Steve, and I said, hey, I talked to Danny Barron, right after my mom passed away. I started a nursing foundation for my mom. She was a nurse for 45 years. And I said, I got to do something for my dad. We named the lobby at the UL golf building after my dad. Zach Brooks helped me with that. I said, but I really want to do something for veterans, for my grandfather, my dad. And Danny said, well, we're working on a Hope for Heroes. And then some other smaller events that happened throughout the summer. And he called me about 2 months ago and said, hey, we've got one here. I'd really like you to be a part of it. And I jumped on board because I feel like my family, we owe everything to veterans and golf and the philosophy of make it work and surround yourself with good people.
Yeah. Well, those are great stories, first of all. And then to dig more into the tournament coming up on the 24th at Polo Fields, it goes without saying that it's for a very good cause, with getting veterans more involved with PGA Hope and eliminating the costs that come with running that program and ensuring that the veterans can continue to get into that at no cost to them. So beyond the groundwork like that, obviously veterans and military are a very important part of your life and your family's life, but what else made this opportunity to become part of this event so appealing to you?
Well, there's a couple of things. The Helmets to Hard Hats, we're going to have that set up. So if anybody has we're going to have that set up at the tournament. If anybody has, if they're in need of a job and they're a veteran, we'd love to give them a shot to come out. The The other thing is, when my father and grandfather passed away, and I'm not going to get too morbid, but I watched them do CPR on my dad. I watched them do stuff on my grandfather. And that's, you know, I went to the doctor and I said, hey, I can't sleep at night. I'm tossing and turning. I said, it's just, you know, we got to figure this out. I said, I don't want any medicine or anything like that. He said, well, you're suffering from a form of PTSD. Well, you know, not to insult veterans, because they see a lot tougher stuff than what I saw, but it's, you know, it's still pretty tough. And I said, so I went and met with my guys at work. I said, do any of you, it's none of my business, you don't have to tell me, but do any of you have PTSD? And they, three of them raised their hand, and they started tearing up. So we went and talked, and I took them to lunch and maybe had a few beers with them. I can't remember. And anyway, I said, there's got to be a way, excuse me, to help with the PTSD. So I'm hoping that if anybody has PTSD at this event, what helped me with my mild case of it is hitting golf balls and playing golf with my son. So I'm hoping that they find a little bit of cure or time away from the bad thoughts by getting hooked on golf at this event. You know, it's a scramble. It's super laid back. They're going to have great golf pros with them. You guys do a great job. It's going to be a fun event. And I just want, if one person gets hooked on golf at this thing that has a trouble, you know, day-to-day thoughts or whatever, I mean, how amazing would that be? So I'm super excited about that part of it. I think golf's a, you know, I hate to keep referring back to golf and all that stuff, but I just feel like in my head, I mean, it's helped me so much with business, life, being a parent, you know, clearing your head, things like that, that it's just, I really feel like one person will get hooked on golf at this event, and that'll be, I mean, that'll be worth anything we could pay.
Yeah, that hits hard. And it's interesting you bring this up. One thing that we cite a lot of times when we send out promotional material about hope is the fact that it can be such a big help when it comes to PTSD, it being golf. So from your experience, for someone like me who doesn't have PTSD and maybe doesn't realize it, can you kind of articulate why exactly golf is so helpful with PTSD? Like, veterans have consistently said golf. It's not like they say tennis or pickleball. It's always golf. Why is it that this sport is such a big help?
So, and I'm not a professional, you know, on the mind or anything like that. But sure. My dad died in 2019. We played golf all the time. My grandfather died in 93. But I was 16 when he passed. And my mom passed from COVID in 2021. Excuse me. What it does is I feel like you get a sense of melancholy, and it's not that you're numb to everything, but, you know, you never want to say, well, that's in the past. Well, that's not fair to the person that passed away. They're not in the past. They're in the future. You know, you're thinking about them all the time. Well, what golf does, and it's a little funny because golf's frustrating, right? Tennis, you can blame it on a partner, not showing up, not whatever. But if I come down to Valhalla's range, in the back range, which I'm doing a call from right now because it's kind of like my happy place. If you come and you hit balls and it takes your mind off things, and that's what it does for me. And I think, well, maybe they're up there in heaven watching, you know, stuff like that. It's a good break because you're outside. It's not an hour. It can be 5, 6, 7 hours. You know, tennis might be just an hour. Basketball is an hour. The camaraderie is what really helps me. Everybody that knows me knows I like to pick and get picked on. And it's just a great thing. I can't express to you enough, my son liking golf, how much it's helped. And we all just got back from spring break, and Jessica and my wife, I mean, she still plays great. We had a great time. We even got my daughter out there hitting it like a field hockey ball. She can crack a 7. She's 14. She cracked a 7 at about 185 yards, and it's amazing. And it's just, I have more stories to tell, and it takes your mind off things for a little bit. Right? If that makes any sense to anybody, I mean, that would be great.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Now, yeah. Hope for Heroes, it's just one day, of course, and there's plenty of stuff that not just our organization, Golf House Kentucky, does with PGA Hope, but then things externally from this building that take place with veterans and playing golf. So have you thought beyond about what else might be to come in terms of what you or your company might do to continue investing in veterans participating with golf?
Yes, I have. Excuse me. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm fighting a little cold. About 2015 or 16, a big influence in my life has been David Novak. And, you know, he's as far as I'm concerned, he's a local legend around here as far as giving. I mean, it's amazing what he's done. There's so many things. My little girl plays field hockey. I know stories of him sponsoring the team, the club team local when Ashley, his daughter, was playing. I mean, it's amazing what he's done. Just, you know, that's in the news, but behind the scenes, I mean, it's amazing. So I don't have the horsepower to follow in his footsteps monetarily, but what I do have is I've learned a lot from him and Jimmy Kirchhofer, Junior Brisman, and Chess Musselman. When I was a kid, it was the Musselman Tour, you know, things like that. But all those guys are very giving, and all their kids are tremendous kids. You can tell a lot about somebody how their kids are, and all those guys. I mean, it's amazing what they're doing out here at Valhalla and all that. What I'd like to do is similar to the Folds of Honor, which David got me involved in. I got to play in his outing twice, so like 2015 and 16, I believe. I met Dan Rooney, who's in charge of Folds of Honor. And
yeah,
they had special days where they'd have, or special holes, I apologize. They had special holes where somebody that maybe has lost a limb would hit a shot for you, and you close to the hole, things like that. But I'd like to get it to where we have some of those guys as well, and the current and veterans from this polo field event. And I'd like to have pros compete for a purse. And then also the team, you know, they would get, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, whatever. Everybody gets a nice gift for playing. Hopefully gets them hooked on golf. Top five teams get a large prize. And then there's a future, you know, maybe there's future rounds involved. It's just getting people hooked on golf. And I feel like that's the best way to honor my grandfather and dad's legacy, is kind of just to help them. And, it's a great question. And until I meet some of these guys, there might be some things that they're thinking of, like, hey, we have a hard time walking. We want to figure a way to play Hirschhorn's par three, you know, par three course. You know, I have them out there as a guest for a day or a week. I don't care. But just have them out, you know, and just try to grow the game through helping veterans. And Gary Player the other day on the par three contest said golf is a world passport. And that's very true. But for me, it's a friend's passport. I've made so many friends, and I'm going to make friends on the 24th at Bowlesville. But we're going to figure a way to keep growing and hopefully get, you know, as close as we can to what David did, which is unbelievable, back in 15, 16, and what it continues to do to this day for everybody. And it's hopefully it'll be remarkable.
Well said. You can't ask for much more than what you just said. So very eloquently put.
Thanks.
One thing that I want to touch on, you brought up the Valhalla ownership and those guys, and I know you wanted to mention some thoughts given the recent Golf Digest article that came out back in March about, you know, I don't know what you want to call it, but just things going on ever since the PGA of America sold Valhalla to the new ownership group. So I'll give you the platform so you can give your two cents on that whole article and everything about it.
Well, I really appreciate that. So when they took ownership, I noticed a drastic difference immediately. I noticed a relief from the staff. I noticed that there's a vision, okay? And not that Valhalla was in bad shape or anything like that. It was just, I don't want to insult anyone. It was kind of in a holding pattern, okay? Well, these guys, I mean, they're members of the best courses in the world, and they know how to help people. They know how to help people that are working here. They know how to make it better, and they know how to make it where it's back again, like the 2008 Ryder Cup, where it's worldwide and people are talking about Valhalla instead of, well, you know, in 10 years from now, there's going to be a tournament. That's not what we want. We want it to help the city, and the things that they've already done, I mean, it is amazing. I think they're going to have a media day on the 18th of April, and hopefully everybody comes out and sees, all the media comes out and sees the changes that have already happened. I really feel like, you know, Jimmy's a very giving person. David Novak's unbelievable. Junior Brisman, I mean, he is so behind the scenes on helping people. He does a food deal for the homeless on Sunday mornings all the time, plus endless other things. Chess is great. His family has always helped out kids. And like I said before, you can tell a lot about people about how their kids are. So my family and several others are 100% behind them. And this thing, I mean, the clubhouse, I'm looking at it right now. It is going to be I mean, just outstanding. There's going to be a patio that comes all the way out that overlooks 18. The greens and all the zoysia. I mean, it's already green right now. Who has green zoysia right now? I mean, it's crazy. So the waterfall behind 13, I think, is just spectacular. And there's a new rock wall on 18. It's just, these guys have a vision because they've been all over the world and they know what it takes to make a city proud. And I think there's no time like the present to get Louisville proud of hosting a tournament and hopefully hosting many more events. So I can't thank those guys enough. My son and I, we have special walks out here. I joined back in 2012 in blue jeans and a t-shirt and a muddy Burke shirt because I just got off a job site. And Keith Reese, I feel like he should be in the Hall of Fame. He's got, I mean, what's he have? He'll have four PGAs, a Ryder Cup, senior PGAs, endless junior tournaments. And he's just a class act. And Kyle has really come into his own here from Indianapolis. He's doing a great job. And, we couldn't be happier with those guys. Really appreciate them.
Awesome. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion, obviously, but I'm glad that you have those thoughts and shared that. I think that was important to get out there.
Yeah, absolutely.
So with that said, Brad, we're going to go ahead and move into our rapid fire segment at the end where you do not need to give me a explanation or a reasoning for any of the questions I'm about to ask. Just give me the first.
Probably a good thing because I'll ramble on like I have been.
No, rambling is good. The best podcasts, as I've told many people, are the ones where I'm doing little talking and other people are doing the talking. So we're falling into the good category so far. But you don't need to explain yourself for any of these questions. So what is your favorite golf course inside Kentucky?
So for sentimental reasons, it's Cherokee. Growing up there, I mean, I still every once in a while I'll go walk five or six holes out there just to clear my head. Valhalla is by far my favorite as far as like we're going to play in the Sunday game. Let's get out there and play. Hurstbourne is also very excellent. I have a great time. I have Kyle and Eric and my buddy Andy Baterney. We play on Saturdays. And there's just great people there. I made a ton of friends. My son has as well. So if I can say three courses, that's three.
They're all tied for first. 1A, 1B, and 1C.
That's right. Thank you.
What's your favorite golf course outside Kentucky?
Outside Kentucky. So I've been very fortunate. I've gotten to play Augusta, and I've gotten to play Cypress Point, and also Seminole. And so I would tie another three courses. Those and throw Pebble in there, but 15, 16, and 17 in Cypress. I hope that's my last three holes I ever play.
Well, those are some slouch courses right there. I really hope someday you get to actually see some good golf.
That's right.
All right, I'm curious. I do have to ask this. As someone who very much wants to go to Cypress Point, you talked about 15, 16, and 17. Is the 18th hole at Cypress Point as bad as people say or as much of a letdown?
No, it's not a bad golf hole. I think the one issue 18 has, and it's not the designer's fault or anything like that. It's just that 15 it looks like you're in a movie. I mean, like a sci-fi movie. It's got a big rock wall, everything's crashing, it's only 110 yards. I love short holes now that I'm older. And then 16 is, so iconic. And the hole that I didn't know about was number 17. It is a hard driver over the ocean and then like a 7-6 iron into the green. So, I mean, they're just fantastic holes. And then 18 is very tricky. You have to hit a 2, 3, or 4 iron down this really narrow fairway and then up. So it's kind of a breather, I guess, is what you say. You play three super hard holes and 14 is no slouch. So you played all those hard holes and you come to 18. It kind of gives you a little breather where you're hitting a 9 iron or wedge into the green. So I like breathers. So I don't dislike the hole that much.
Interesting. All right. Good to file away for the memory bank. What would your dream foursome be and what golf course would you all play at?
So my dream foursome, I kind of had that. My son had a hole in one. It was down at Concession. He was 10 years old. I had it with my wife. My daughter got her out there and myself. And I guess if I could add a fifth and a sixth, playing anywhere would be my dad and my grandpa with us four. And probably we play a couple holes of Cherokee, a couple holes of Pebble Beach, a couple holes of Valhalla, a couple holes of Cypress, and maybe finish up on 18 at Augusta. That would be incredible.
Pretty good right there.
Yeah.
If you're playing a normal round of golf, do you like to walk or ride?
Well, so I'm because of I call it flying a desk. I sit at the desk a lot right now. I've gained a little weight, so I'm trying to walk more. And I don't play as well, but I'm working on it. There's a guy named Luke Deckard at Pro Rehab, yeah. And he has helped me, I mean, immensely. And I recommend anybody to go to him. I mean, he's got me twisting and turning like I never have, and it's great. And it's taken a lot. I got sick in 2009, and again in 2015, and I hurt my back really bad. So it's been great. But if I'm hanging with my buddies and we're listening to music, I want to ride. But if it's a Sunday game of a Valhalla, I'm walking.
I like it. Do you have a favorite golf book?
I got to meet Ben Crenshaw, and my son was four, and I asked him how I could get my son into golf. I said, I don't want him to be any good. I don't care if he's any good. I just want to be able to hang out with him like I do with my dad and grandfather. And he said, have you ever read Harvey's Little Red Book? And I said, I sure have. And he said, well, there's a section in there about taking little kids just around the chipping green. And I did that, and my son Brady's been hooked ever since. And that's my favorite book.
Good reason.
Yeah.
How many holes in one do you have?
I have seven. I've been lucky.
Not bad.
Yeah.
What's your favorite vacation spot in the world?
So people make fun of me, but it's very near and dear to my heart. When I tried to play professionally, I discovered the Emerald Coast, and I played with Bubba Watson, Boo Weekly, Heath Slocum, all those guys. And I worked at driving range in Sandestin, Florida. And it's right there next to Destin, between Destin and Panama City. And we play a course called Camp Creek now, my son and I. And somebody could say, hey, do you want to go to the Bahamas? Actually, Danny's asked me to go out of the country. And I said, no, I'm going to my spot. And I love it down there. Everybody says, you all, and, you know, they hold the door for you. And it's just, that's kind of my style. I love that little area of the Panhandle.
Very nice. And then one last question for you. I think I know the answer to this, but I'm not positive. Are you a UK fan or a Louisville fan?
Oh, man. So I'm a diehard Louisville fan. But I really like Calipari. I've got to meet him a few times and Miss Barnhart. But Kenny Payne is so nice to my son on the driving range when he sees him at Cardinal Club or here at Valhalla that I could care less how many games we win. I'm pulling for good people, just like I learned early in life. And I think that once he gets a little more time under his belt, it's going to be very fantastic. So we're diehard Louisville.
Yeah, he does seem like a real winner in life. And to your point, it may not be showing on the basketball court as of this moment, but hard to ask for a better person to lead a program.
I don't believe there is. I think he's just a tremendous human.
For sure. Well, that's a good wholesome note to end on, Brad. Really appreciate you coming on here and sharing some stories and your life knowledge. There's a lot of good stuff, I think, in here for people to glean off of and use for their own usage going forward, whether that's on the course or off it. But we're looking forward to big day at Polo Fields here in a couple of weeks, and if I don't see you then, I will definitely see you down the road, pal.
Sounds good. Hey, I want to give you a shout out. Congratulations on your upcoming wedding and your new job, man. That's that's great. And I also ask that you give Barbara a hug in there for me.
We're all about virtual hugs for Barbara, so we can definitely
do that.
She's
my buddy. She's been there a long time. She's been great to me ever since I was a little kid, so definitely appreciate her. And thanks for having me. Hopefully I didn't ramble too much, and hopefully one person will listen to it and get addicted that doesn't play golf and gets addicted to maybe trying golf out. That's all I care about.
Hey, everyone. Usually we would end the podcast right there with the parting thoughts from our guest. But as Brad indicated, I've got some news to report. I recently accepted a new job away from Golf House Kentucky with Cardinal Point Financial Group here in Louisville. And I'm going to be doing marketing with them starting in May, and that means that in all likelihood, this is going to be my final podcast and my final chance to chat with you, our listeners. I want to take a moment, first of all, regardless of if this is the first episode you've listened to or if you've listened to all 70, thank you for listening to at least one of these. This podcast was an idea I had 2.5 years ago as a way to further bring golf in Kentucky into people's lives. And I never thought that there would be 10,000 different people who would download it, but that's happened somehow. And I can't thank you enough for supporting this and supporting me and just being a listener, regardless of if we've ever spoken before or not. I just want to let you know that it has not gone unnoticed and it is much appreciated. And if there's anything I can ever do for anybody, please don't be a stranger. My social media handles on Twitter and Instagram are Mr. Fish One, and that's Mr. spelled out M-I-S-T-E-R. So please don't be a stranger. I don't plan on it. And I'm definitely going to be continuing to support activities that go on within Golf House Kentucky and doing my part to continue to grow interest in the sport, even if I'm not actually working with Golf House anymore. On that note, I do just want to say, next time you're at a tournament or fundraiser, whatever it is, take a moment to thank the people on the Golf House Kentucky staff. This job can be very demanding at times. There's quite a few points during the summer where you're not home very much. Like there was one stretch last year where I walked in my house at about 11:45 p.m. at night, and then I turned around the next morning at 4:30 and went to another tournament. And that's just the way it is sometimes. It's a labor of love, and I know everyone who works here has the same amount of dedication to the sport that I do, and just be sure to thank them every now and then. It's sometimes a thankless job, but it's very grueling at times, and people here deserve a lot of appreciation. But with that said, I'm going to go ahead and sign off. Not entirely sure what the future of this podcast will be going forward, but I do hope that it stays around. And so I'll definitely be listening and supporting it. And I hope you continue to do so as well. But it has been a pleasure delivering these stories with you over the past 2 years and 3 months. And I look forward to hearing many more in the future. So signing off one last time. It's been a pleasure, everybody. Take care.